Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity episode 271. I am your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as always, by Neil Ronahan.
Hey, everybody.
So Nintendo revealed a new game. What is it called? Game Builder Garage.
A game that looks suspiciously like it might have been a Labo in a previous life.
It's a great ploy, because who would ever recognize it?
The creatures that you connect are Nodon. Mm-hmm. They're nodes. I don't know if do they give a name to the little block guy? I'm pretty sure that's the little character that was in a lot of Labo stuff.
It's hard to tell from the trailer. I need to dig back into the Labo. So the point of if you haven't seen the trailer, this is a game about making games. And it uses the interface and seemingly the assets from the Labo Garage. I kind of need to dig back into the Labo Garage to see, how much is this giving us that's new that isn't in the Labo Garage? Because that was the thing about that, is you didn't have to use the Labo to make games in that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the one thing with the Labo Garage was that you couldn't share anything that you made.
Correct.
Which kind of just, kneecapped that from ever being that cool. The tools were kind of neat. I wish I could credit whoever I saw first mention it, but that the amount of things that you can do in this are almost doubled. The amount of connections and nodons you can have you can make a much more complicated game in this compared to what you can do in Labo Garage. But other than that, the interface kind of looks like that. It looks like that it's that playful, creative Nintendo way that I feel like I've seen come up in WarioWare DIY or even Super Mario Maker.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all built around kind of making your own games. It looks like maybe a light version of Sony's Dreams. Something in line with Roblox is what this seems to be in line with, but with Nintendo Touch, that will hopefully make it very intuitive and fun to use, because it's the one thing that I think they struggled with a little bit when they made WarioWare DIY and nailed perfectly with Super Mario Maker. Was in Super Mario Maker, it's just fun to make things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the joy
simple.
Of the game.
It's very, very intuitive. This feels like it has a bit more. I mean, obviously, it's all still a visual format, but it seems like it has a bit more of a tie to actual programming, the way it works. So your tool set, it gives you a lot more options. Most of the games they show off in this are from a kind of 2D perspective, though they're kind of 2.5D. But they do have a quick glimpse at the end where you definitely see some fully 3D, first-person games. So I'll be curious to see if they can maintain that Mario Maker level of simplicity and accessibility in something that allows you to make stuff of multiple genres in multiple styles in full 3D, because that seems inherently way more complicated.
I mean, it's all going to depend on how easy these tools are to use. Some of the things you can see that in the trailer, and Nintendo also calls it out in the press release, they say you can make side-scrolling platformers and kart racers and space blasters, and it does look like it could be pretty sharp technology to use and make stuff with. And the price point for it, it's $29.99 or whatever it is in your local currency.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's decently priced for what it is. Hopefully that the low barrier of entry kind of gets more people on board. Cause I think that's one of the things that, for example, something like Dreams is struggling with, is that it's incredible, but not it came out near the end of the PS4's life. I assume it's backwards compatible on PS5. I'm not sure. But how much of an active, sizable community there is. I'm sure there are people still messing around with Dreams, but how big is that community? And mm-hmm. that's what I think Game Builder Garage has the potential with, the spot that the Switch is in, the price point when it's coming out, that it could be, a really vibrant, shareable thing that, more people experience than some of the other similar technology out there.
And I think, I would say this, even from the color palette of this trailer with its bright yellows and black text, if they can get the Mario Maker fan base on board, and especially the more public-facing Mario Maker creators on board, all the top-ranked players or creators on that platform to jump over to this, then I think there's potential. Because Mario Maker had a huge, even on Wii U, had a huge boom in as it started to be like streamed on Twitch and things like that. So yeah. if this can capitalize on that same market, which I've already seen several Mario Maker creators tweet about this and be excited for it. Yeah. So if that can capitalize on that same thing, then I think there's a potential to have a lasting community around it. Assuming it's, you know, like I said, workable and accessible to people. Because if it's just going to be programming, then...
Yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of thing of like Roblox, for example, yeah. which is bigger than we all probably realize. You know, I don't think Nintendo's going to reach the heights of Roblox with this. That'd be wild if they did. I'm not the kind of person that is I've never gotten into these. I got into making Mario Maker levels, but other than that, I'm usually a person who enjoys what people make as opposed to making it myself. But it does look fun. Like I want to experience it. I want to mess around with it. I think it's something that probably not at my kid's age right now, but when he gets a little older, will definitely be something that I think he would gravitate towards. I mean, he's been messing around with making Mario levels himself now, even if he just eventually gets to a point where he just blows it all up and doesn't save anything. And will often just jump into a lava pit and laugh.
Listen, the world is temporary.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get too attached.
I just like the idea of also sharing the stuff online, which you can actually do in this game. Although, of course, in the most Nintendo way, it's via codes. It doesn't look like you're going to be able to like open up a thing.
Yeah, they need an interface. They need an interface for that real bad if they want this thing to last.
We'll see. Like maybe, you know, I'm not going to be super optimistic about it, but it's still just the fact that you can share stuff online. Already marked improvement from what came from the past of Labo Garage.
Yeah.
I do also like the idea that, like, when you do see what other people have made through the codes that they shared, you can go in underneath the hood and see what they did to do it.
Which is very Mario Maker in the way that works, of being able to not only play the level, but download it and take it apart and change it and all that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who made this, because it could just be the Labo team, and I wouldn't be surprised with that, but... You know, it does have a little bit of that WarioWare DIY, that Mario Maker vibe. Maybe it's with like the way that Nintendo has their new development structure. Maybe it's cross-functional in a way that past games might not have been.
It would make sense to have the Mario Maker team just come in and look at the Labo Garage interface and just say, all right, how can we make this a bit more friendly?
Whenever you touch like a line, it's just like, line.
Yeah. A cat's paw comes in and grabs it. Yeah, that's the thing is the Labo VR one was, or not Labo VR, the Labo Garage one was a little intimidating. Mario Maker
it was
isn't.
Really cool. Yeah,
right. You could do incredible things with it, but it was intimidating. So if they can get over that hurdle with this, it could be very cool. And I am excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah, should be really neat. And we haven't even mentioned that it's coming out in a month. It's coming out on June 11th.
Yeah, very soon. So that is the Nintendo way these days, is to just kind of like tell you as they hand you the game.
And it will be interesting because that's, I mean, who knows what E3 will even be by the time this is out in the world. I mean, as of recording, Nintendo's investor meeting is hours away. You might know what E3 is more than we do right now. but this game's coming out at the tail end of E3. So I don't know. If this will be showcased as part of Nintendo's E3, or if it'll be completely separate, or maybe E3 is just going to not happen. I have no idea. Any of these things would not surprise me, because who knows what this world is. But I do know that I'm looking forward to playing Game Builder Garage, potentially in the hospital while my wife gives birth to our second son.
There you go.
Because it's getting around that time.
And you can name him Game Builder.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess the other thing that you could name him is Metalhead Software purchased by EA, which wouldn't be a very good name.
It'd be a little bittersweet. But it's an option.
I had to transition somehow.
So, for people who... I guess I haven't mentioned my affinity for the Super Mega Baseball series on this show yet. I think when I was last a regular on Connectivity, it was before I realized how amazing the series was. And since I last returned, it was several months since Super Mega Baseball 3 had come out. If you like baseball video games, Super Mega Baseball 2 and 3, both available on the Switch, are arguably two of the greatest baseball games ever made. Like, really just incredible. There's like a pretty good demo for $3 that's available on the Switch. So you can go check it out for yourself. If you don't like baseball,
play online and everything, right? Like, it's a pretty substantial demo.
Yeah, there's basically, I think it lets you do like a pretty limited like offline exhibition thing, and then they have like an online, it's not like traditional baseball seasons, more like your free to play game seasons where it's, you know, you play a couple games, you get like ranked, and then like over the course of a week or two, then you see who wins the most games. But yeah, go check it out if you haven't. But it might be bittersweet because as of now, EA and EA Sports bought Metalhead Software, my darling sweet boys in Vancouver, who made the Super Mega Baseball series. What that means, we're not totally for sure yet. It did say in the press release that Metalhead, working with EA, is going to continue making the Super Mega Baseball franchise. So hopefully that continues. Hopefully we get a Super Mega Baseball 4. Although it is like when you did get to Super Mega Baseball 3, like they had a friggin' franchise mode in it. The games, like, I don't know where else you can go with that game other than just like bigger and bigger to the point where it'd just be too unwieldy. There's a lot of content packed into Super Mega Baseball 3. So the thing that I know people have been speculating, and is probably true, is that it might be EA working with Metalhead to then get the MLB license. And make that, and it would be the kind of thing where I don't think it would necessarily be a rival to MLB The Show. It could be a rival to MLB's published game RBI Baseball, which is terrible. I've heard that it's gotten progressively better over the past couple of years, but like that game was horrendous. It didn't have sack flies. Like, that means nothing to you, John. Just know it's a really big deal. I think
MLB
they finally
not publish The Show.
So I think MLB Now publishes The Show.
Okay, because I was assuming that was how it was on Xbox, was that was something that MLB
like,
decided
I know
to
that's
do.
The case.
Okay.
I'm not totally up to date with, like, because there was, I guess it was a year or two ago, was when the announcement was made that MLB The Show, which was a game that was published by Sony, made by a Sony studio, a Sony-owned studio.
And still is.
Yeah, it still is, but like for years it was, you know, PlayStation exclusive because it was, you know, sub-published by Sony. But I think it was by part of their like agreement or re-upping the deal with Major League Baseball. Then I think it was the plan was that MLB The Show was going to be on other platforms. So I think with that, MLB was publishing the game on Xbox, for example.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, people made the big thing about, like, Sony made a deal on Game Pass. Like, no, it's MLB made a deal with Xbox to get The Show on Game Pass. That's how that went down.
I would love to be in the Sony boardroom meetings. What's crazy is that Sony's internal studios had to make an Xbox game.
Yeah.
And the best version of that game, because I watched the Digital Foundry video on this.
Oh,
is it really the best version
of the game?
The Series X version? Yeah, that's the best version of the game. It's because I watched it because I was like, well, if I were Sony, surely they'll gimp that version.
Yeah.
Because they obviously want the PS5 version to be the best. So I was pretty surprised that it was, that's probably the way to play. Which was just bizarre.
I haven't downloaded. I haven't played it yet. I haven't played The Show since I think like Vita.
Sure.
but I will likely, especially with being a part of Game Pass, like I used to get really deep into those more simulation baseball games. But I'm not as like interested in the in-depth knowledge of Major League Baseball as I was when I was younger. Like, for example, going back to EA, the new owners and stewards of Metalhead Software, MVP Baseball 2005 was put out by EA. That game is fantastic. I played the snot out of the GameCube version. It's an immaculate, simulation baseball video game. And then that was like the next year was 2K Games then got the exclusive third party rights to Major League Baseball video games. So that's why Sony's The Show was allowed to exist while 2K had the rights until they made bad games, and then they stopped making baseball games, and then there weren't multi-platform baseball games for a number of years, and then Major League Baseball started putting out RBI Baseball, which is crap. And now, I don't know, I think sports games are going to get really interesting in the next couple of years.
So multiple games have the rights to use the teams?
No, that's the way it used to be. Like, there okay. there was, like ages ago, so with a lot of sports, you have, there's, like, Major League Baseball, there's MLB, and that's, like, the rights to the teams, locations, stadiums, and everything. Mm-hmm. Then there's the MLB Players Association. You need to have an agreement with them to then have the rights to use all the player names. So, okay. there was, like, I can't think of a specific one. There's totally, like, an NES game that sure. has, like, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, has all of those teams, and has none of the players. All the players.
Yeah. Are yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Like, for example, the Griffey games on Super Nintendo. Griffey's in the game. The teams are right. All the other players are fake.
All of the players are just Ken Griffey.
Yeah. Although I think that might be the case where, like, I think there might, at least one of those Super Nintendo Griffey games, I think it's like you could basically pair one to one. Like, this is totally Don Mattingly. Like, oh, sure. I think like
the
stuff
names
like
aren't
that.
Right, but yeah, but it's definitely that guy.
I mean, that's what they used to do in the NCAA games too. Yeah. And then eventually got in hot water because you were putting people in video games who could not, who like their likeness could not be represented in a video game. Yeah. And that's illegal. And maybe college kids should get compensated in some fashion for the fact that TV stations and schools uh-huh. make oodles of money off of them risking their lives playing sports.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not a sports guy, as some of our listeners may have figured out, but that whole NCAA thing from an outsider's perspective, that seems like a scam.
Yeah. There's a South Park episode that like lampoons it, where it basically makes the thinly veiled reference that student athletes is basically like slavery.
Yeah.
And that might be a little extreme, but like it's real.
But they ain't paying them.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong, like, I love watching NCAA basketball in March. It's really good. Do you have any idea how much stinking money all of that makes? And none of kids get any of it.
Oh, I know those coaches get quite a few dollars.
And then you have people that are like, you have coaches being like, I don't know, if you pay the kids, it's going to ruin the game. It's like, listen, Dabo, you got $15 million. Shut up. Like,
well, when has paying your employees ever in any situation damaged productivity? Like, is there an example of that?
But yeah, so there was that thing, like, you know, I think it was 2005, 2006 was when Major League Baseball then had like an exclusive third party only deal with 2K Games. And then that game stopped being made. And then there was a while where there just kind of was only one baseball game and it was on Sony platforms.
Yeah.
But I think we're getting to the point where, I mean, I think we're probably going to hear in a couple months that EA's got the MLB license again. Cause I think it's a little bit more of an open season for that. Cause I think it's, you realize that when you don't have the engagement of a sports game, you do kind of lose part of your fan base. And like it is weird to think of, like, there's, you know, sports like baseball that if you weren't on a Sony system, you didn't really have a halfway decent sports game to play.
Yeah.
With those players.
So you think they'll license it to EA while continuing to make the show?
I think so. Okay. I that could happen. And you even have, On the flip side of when I was referencing sports games being pretty interesting in the near future, so Madden has had the exclusive NFL rights, mm-hmm. At least for, I think there might be some mobile games that are like that have the NFL license, but as far as like for consoles, it's been Madden and Madden only since 2000. I think it was, I forget who shot first, but I think like NFL went exclusive to EA, and then like 2K was like, well, screw you. We're going to take baseball away from you now. I think EA probably made the better decision there because football is way more popular. But you have Madden, and Madden's been in the driver's seat. It's been the only professional football game since for 15 years at this point. And there's this whole thing going on with the Madden community where they're all pissed off because it's stagnated. And as someone who plays a lot of Madden every year, like, it ain't getting that much better. Like,
yeah,
I enjoy it. The load times are really good on Series X, but like, they haven't changed that much about the game in a while. And it is like, I understand the stagnation complaints. But now 2K Games, who, you know, used to make football games 15 years ago, they announced, I think it was right before the pandemic started, around then. I know there's an article that I wrote in response, because I think it could mean there's actually going to be an NFL game on the Switch, in that they were going to make a more like arcade football game using the NFL license.
Oh, sure.
And we could, that could be something like, maybe we're going to hear about that soon. Maybe it's 2022. I don't know, but like, I think it's going to get a little interesting, because it's been pretty like just chalk for a while with sports games. Like,
yeah.
EA has the NHL rights. 2K has NBA 2K, which is really good. And even that, like, there was NBA Playgrounds, and then 2K just bought that. So it's gonna be interesting, because those, like, NBA 2K and Madden are still two of the most successful, and FIFA as well.
Yeah.
They're some of the highest selling games every year. Every year they are.
You don't think that EA would use Metalhead to do like other sport? Like, would they do Super Mega Football?
I think, or, so they mentioned like there wasn't,
because they talk about new IPs in that.
Yeah. I'm gonna go find it, and then EA Sports and Metalhead are teaming up to grow the Super Mega Baseball franchise, as well as develop new gaming and sports experiences for players worldwide. Like, yeah. that could mean other sports. Like, and
because you could use like the Super Mega brand as just kind of like start an like for your more arcadey sports games offshoot or something.
Yep.
When if they already have the licenses, is there a rule on how many games one company can make using those licenses?
I think it might depend on the contract.
Because I was going to say, can they just use the NFL license as many times as they want and in many different games, as long as they're all made by them?
Super Mega Blitz.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I will recognize that the NFL Blitz game that came out on like Xbox 360 and PS3 is 100% not the same as the classic arcade game. Mm-hmm. For example, like, the late hits are kind of gone because the NFL at a certain point was like, this is bad for the brand. I played a lot of that NFL Blitz game on 360 and PS3 with friends, and it was a very good time. It felt good. It was also like the last holdover of the Wii Madden games, which I'll always carry a torch for. They were very fun.
They should just keep doing that with the with Switch. I mean, not keep. They have to start doing it. They haven't made it on Switch, but
I will. I was very excited when Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 were announced to be coming to Switch a couple months ago. I will do literal backflips if they're like, even if it's like heavily compromised Madden's coming to Switch this year. Like, I just want to be able to like do a franchise mode on my Switch. Like, I will
take whatever. They put one on Wii U.
Yeah. And guess what? Like, I mean, I feel it's the kind of thing where, you know, that I'm honest with that, because if I had my druthers, I would have just given that a 10 out of 10 and be like, keep making these on Wii U forever.
Yeah.
I think I gave it like a 7, because it was a little rough around the edges, but I think I said in that review of the Wii U launch game Madden, that I was like, man, can't wait to see what they do in year 2.
Yeah. Surely the system will last for at least a year.
It'll last forever. We're never going to die. but... Because that had the stuff where you could like basically draw audibles on the touchscreen, which was the coolest stuff. And you could call plays off the screen that way too. Like, it just made it such a very unique experience that I haven't really seen duplicated elsewhere because of the nature of the Wii U. That's what I'm gonna keep on banging the drum for Switch successor. Have it be compatible with all of Switch's games. Just give me a second screen. I don't know how you do it. That's for Nintendo to figure out. Two screen gaming. That's the future.
I did just get to the part. I'm very slowly working my way through Ask Iwata, where they talk about Yamauchi pitching the idea that they should make a system with two screens. So yeah,
that is my role right now. I will be Yamauchi in this situation where I'll just yell at people Be like, just two screens, figure it out.
Yell at people in like a vaguely threatening way. Where you're not sure, like, is he just talking like business, or is that man actually going to have me killed?
Does he actually have an idea for this, or is he just throwing things into the wind?
Yeah. Is
which that I think that's crazy? Even, I think that's even something that comes up in Ask Iwata, where, like, Iwata's just like, I don't know if he actually thought it was a good idea or not. He just told us we should do it.
That's he makes a comment. He's like, I'm not sure if he literally meant do something with two screens or just do something weird, but we made a system with two screens.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well.
And it's it worked. Yeah. It's a good book. If you haven't read it, I'm almost at the end, but it's good. But you mentioned Tony Hawk, and so we'll shift from sports to some more extreme sports.
With how many X's? How many X's?
Least three.
Okay. So yeah. BMX triple X, let's go. BMX triple X, that's four, technically.
Oh. They should have called it BMX double X.
Turns out that game's terrible. Anyway, you know what game's not terrible? Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, at least the Xbox version. I can vouch for that. I can't vouch for any other version of that. But we'll find out soon enough because Tony Hawk 1 and 2 is coming out on Switch on June 25th, which... I seem to remember, like, they said later this year, and I was really assuming, like, fall. Yeah. So this is a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, this kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Much like the original announcement of the game coming to Switch came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
This also came out of nowhere. Well, I guess it didn't come out of nowhere because it was Tony Hawk talking to Crash Bandicoot on Twitter or whatever the fuck.
Tony Hawk is canonically friends with Crash Bandicoot. Never forget. We're in the best timeline.
For June 25th is when this game's coming out. A little concerning. I haven't seen any footage.
Nintendo tweeted, and I was trying to figure out if they were actually showing
if that was
the Switch version, because I was looking at it and you see
it's just
a
him.
Skater of some sort skating over some pools of water, and like the reflections are definitely just like a cube map. It's not like real-time reflections, so I think that's the Switch version. They tweeted a GIF. I think
it's Tony Hawk skating Switch.
I get it.
I'm looking at the GIF right now. That's probably the Switch version.
Yeah, he has no reflection. The reflection that's in there is just a cube map. It's not real time.
Yeah.
I think that's the Switch version. Which, yeah. I mean...
And we know it's being developed by in-house at Vicarious Visions or Activision Blizzard East, whatever they're called now. And I guess it might be their final product that they release as Vicarious Visions, which is bittersweet. But I have faith in Vicarious Visions porting Tony Hawk games because they've been doing it for a very long time.
Yes.
They've been porting Tony Hawk games for I think longer than Xander's been alive.
Xander's not even on the show right now.
But yeah, he's getting called out. Standing.
Somebody find Xander and tell him he's young.
I think it's a few years. Xander would have been like 4 years old or something whenever they first made a Tony Hawk port. They did all the like the Game Boy Advance ports of a lot of them, and I think the Nintendo ports as well. Just like I don't think they did the Nintendo 64 ports. That was a company called like Edge of Reality or something.
Yeah, that sounds
but I think
right.
They might have done like the GameCube versions. I know they definitely did some Wii versions. But I have faith in Vicarious Visions of taking a graphically good looking game on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, and then making it look a little less good but run fine on Switch.
Well, I mean, there's an argument for nobody knows the code like the people who wrote it.
Yeah.
And Activision's history so far with Switch ports of their remasters, obviously done.
Which Vicarious, I think, handled one of them, right?
I thought, was it Vicarious or were they both? Because I'm thinking, so Crash Insane Trilogy, Spyro, and Crash 4.
Insane
I know
Trilogy.
Some of them were Toys for Bob.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were all in-house at Activision. I haven't played Crash 4 yet, but from what I've seen, that was a good port as well. That Spyro port is excellent. So yeah, no, there's there is hope here.
Okay, Toys for Bob did the Switch version of the Insane Trilogy. Vicarious Visions did port it to Xbox One, though.
Okay. Yeah, no, I suspect, I think it'll be fine. Like, the only thing, they just have to beat the N64 version. Like, the bar is low for Nintendo releases of Tony Hawk.
Just have
Pro
all
Skater.
Of the music in it. That's all I, give me Superman.
Yep.
Give me the actual lyrics to Police Truck and not just the background.
We say put the whole song in, but like, really, you could just put Superman in.
Yeah.
Even if you have to cut out the entire rest of the soundtrack to fit it on the cartridge, as long as Superman's on there, we're good.
It's a really good soundtrack because it does a good thing, and it's one thing that I think all of the Tony Hawk games have done a good job, even the ones that play like crap, is that the soundtracks do a good job of capturing like that skate park vibe.
That skate park vibe in a very specific like year. Like,
yeah.
Because even if you go from, you know, like Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 to like Thug, like the soundtracks are wildly different. Just like because of the time period in which they were released. It's such a it's a very time capsule kind of game for music.
We'll say there's a note on Wikipedia about the Insane Trilogy that the Switch port for the Insane Trilogy was not going to happen until a single engineer at Vicarious Visions ported the game's first level to the platform.
Wow. All right, well, hopefully that person...
Yeah, I hope that guy's still there.
...is in charge of this.
That'll feel very good about Tony Hawk 1 and 2 on Switch and also Diablo 2 on Switch, because that is what Vicarious Visions is working on after this, is the Diablo 2 remastered game.
Are they doing the Switch port? Is there a Switch port?
Yeah, that's coming to Switch. Okay. I'm pretty sure. I recall someone being excited.
Surely if
that
Diablo
cover
3
it.
Is on Switch, then Diablo 2 would get... I can't imagine it wouldn't run.
Yeah, I think Diablo 3 did pretty well on Switch, too.
Yeah, that port got an insane amount of love.
Yeah, it's a very good port.
It's certainly a 360 game.
Yeah, but I'm really excited for Tony Hawk 1 and 2. It's coming out the same day as Mario Golf, which the Mario Golf game turns out to be good. Like,
that
I will be at home with my infant, just passed out, happy, man, feeding him a bottle.
How did they manage to find like two sports adjacent games that I'm actually interested in and then put them out on the same day?
Like, it's the only two sports games coming to Switch this year now.
Yeah, well, probably. I mean, I guess
that's
FIFA.
The other going back very quickly to the sports thing. That's the other wild thing about that's interesting about sports is that we're gonna have dueling golf games. Actually, I guess more than that, because we're gonna have Mario Golf. EA announced that they're making a new golf game, and PGA Tour 2K. I mean, that game came out last year, and they're making another one of those. So.
And are all of those confirmed? I know PGA, the 2K one, came out on Switch.
Yeah.
The
EA one might not even be this year. Okay. But like they announced that they're making one. But I'm looking forward to another, like, hopefully, improvements are made to the Switch port. Because I think the foundation that they have with that, the PGA Tour 2K game, is fantastic. It's just that the port itself was a little rough.
2K... I don't know about 2K's Switch port history.
The NBA games are great ports.
Okay.
That's the one thing that I've been impressed with throughout my, I guess, 3 or 4 years of reviewing those NBA games is they're really good ports.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember like the PGA one seemed like a good underlying game with a rough port. They of course have the legendary WWE 2K17 or whatever it was, which I think remains broken and unplayable to this day. I don't think that was ever fixed.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of things that weren't fixed about that.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about it last week, but I got to, speaking of the WWE game that was developed by Yuke's. Yuke's is also developing that Earth Defense Force game that's coming out in May.
Oh, sure.
That's soon. That's in a few weeks.
May is now.
I did like a preview event for that online. That game looks pretty cool. That's all I have to say. I just wanted to call it out because it's like a fun voxel game where you're shooting stuff and there's classes and there's a koala man and a live stream sister that her attack is like barrage and then a bunch of thumbs up attack bugs.
Is this one canon to the other ones?
I don't believe it is. It is a spinoff.
Okay. I want it to exist in the same universe so that, like, they have to create realistic versions of all these characters later.
I mean, hey, if it's really successful, maybe that will happen.
Reignites the Earth Defense Force franchise, which I don't think had burnt out, but, you know, whatever. Speaking of games that you didn't talk about last week.
Stonefly. Another game that I saw in a video preview event a few months back. Stonefly is coming from Flight School Studios. They did Creature in the Well, which is the Zelda pinball game. I guess it's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
Really cool game. You can go check out my review of it from when it came out in 2019, I want to say. But their next game, Stonefly, which is a chill and tranquil mech adventure game that, honestly, when the more I see footage of that game, the more like enchanting it looks. And I like
it's beautiful.
Yeah, like the sound design and the soundtrack, just like it looks like a world I really want to live in.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for Stonefly.
Yeah.
Just once again, it looks like the kind of, like, you're gonna go through these cool looking environments. It's a lot of like resource collection. There's a narrative with your character losing a family heirloom, and then you try to find it and, you know, discover a thing or two about yourself. And like, it looks like there's, you know, kind of, you go to different levels, you can do like really hard stuff, or you can kind of like gently explore and go through the story. And then, and like a lot of your combat, it's not necessarily like aggressive combat. It's more like you can play to be defensive and not necessarily like you're going to shoot them with your lasers. It's like your attack, at least that they showed early on, was just that, like, oh, like you use like gusts of wind to blow enemies away, as opposed to like anything that aggressive, because your character isn't that disruptive. It's just a world I want to spend time in.
Yeah. You have a preview of it up at NintendoReport.com. If anybody wants to check it out, there's like a trailer and everything there too. Watch the trailer. Sometimes when you see the screenshots really small, it doesn't really convey the art style of the game. Like, blow those suckers up on a big screen, because the artwork is amazing.
Yeah.
And then you've also been playing a game that's very appropriate for Cinco de Mayo when we're recording this, which I can only assume is a game about tacos.
Save Me, Mr. Taco, which is a game that was already came out on Switch. You play as a little octopus named Mr. Taco. Mr. Taco, I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to say a taco. It's Cinco de Mayo. So this game came out published by Nicholas, who...
legendarily good publisher, Nicholas, who everyone loves and we don't have anything bad to say about.
There's an article that Radio Free Nintendo's James Jones wrote a couple years ago, calling them out, and I agree with everything that he said, because it's the kind of thing where Nicholas has put out very great games. They brought Cave Story to a wider audience. 1001 Spikes, you know, fun game. I think they, what else did they, brought out other good games, right?
They did
Binding of Isaac.
Yeah, they also did Redout.
Yeah, Redout.
Because I know Redout Space Assault was them escaping from Nicholas.
But I don't know, like, there's a lot of reporting out there that I won't speak too definitively on and let that reporting speak for it. But there's a lot of stuff out there about how they basically take advantage of different developers.
Yep.
And you can tell that whenever some of these developers escape and they're just like, oh, I made it. I'm alive. I think they also screwed over the developers of It'll Do, which is a, you know, totally fine game. I'm just happy to see, the developer of Save Me, Mr. Taco, which is it's like almost got like Game Boy visuals. It's a really cute platform. It's got that platform. Like
green and darker green.
It actually, you can change it to be a steady, like a consistent, whatchamacallit, a consistent palette for the whole time. But also like changes depending on the levels and areas that you go in, which is really neat. It's just a super cute, charming little platformer. Like a pretty solid story going on about like the octopus people being at war with the humans above and stuff like that. I never played the original. Cause I think that came out in the time period where I was like, I'm just not touching these guys games with a 10-foot pole.
Now, so this version is published by Limited Run Games.
It is.
Did they take the existing version off the eShop, or is the digital version? Okay, so they pulled it and republished it.
Yeah, I think there was even something that like the developer came out. I think it was like a Patreon post or something, said something along the lines of like, we tried to do whatever we could, that like if you bought the first game, you know, you could get a discount on the second game, but because it got removed from the eShop and it's from a different publisher, I think they couldn't get it to work. But this is technically Save Me, Mr. Taco Definitive Edition. And there are some tweaks. It seems like with some of the Returnal chat going on about difficulty settings and everything, I think the difficulty settings are new for this version, and it's pretty nice because you can pick. There's like a, you know, a normal, which is a one hit death, although like if you're wearing a hat, you'll get a second hit sometimes. There's also like a story easy mode where it'll give you like more hearts and unlimited lives or something like that. And there's like a super hard, like three lives and you're dead mode as well. But at any point, there's like a village in the game that you can just go to. And it's actually like written into the story that it's like, I don't know what the weirdo's doing in the basement. And you go down there and you can change the difficulty. and I just like the way that, like, you know, they integrated having these different options as part of the world. And I've heard just like there's a lot of tweaks and fixes along the way of it. It strikes me as that the original game might have been a little unforgiving, and it seems like just some of those rough edges got sawed off. But I don't have any experience with the original game, so all I can speak about is my experiences with the new version, which is super fun. And of course, since it's limited run games, there's going to be a physical version eventually.
Obviously, yeah.
I don't think they've said when. I do have to, man, I'm so tempted by all the stupid limited run games. I did get Scott Pilgrim. Yeah. I like broke the seal with limited run games by getting Scott Pilgrim. That just seemed like one, like, even if it's not that I don't like the Scott Pilgrim game, because I think the soundtrack's incredible. The visuals are amazing. There's a certain thing where, like, unless your beat-em-up is the greatest beat-em-up of all time, maybe I don't want to play it. And I think the Scott Pilgrim beat-em-up is totally fine. It's just one that, unless I'm playing with, like, four buddies, I'm not really going to do that much with. But just by the fact that, like, I think that soundtrack's incredible. It already was a game that was inaccessible for, like, 10 years.
Yep.
Like, I'll get my physical version of that. I'm looking at the Castlevania one that I think is going live soon. And I'm just amazed as I kind of pay more attention to these that it's just like, here's like a $150 version that comes with like boxes for every Castlevania game and a steel book. And like, it's crazy muttering all of these. And I mean, it's good for them. It seems like business is booming. I got an Astro City Mini from them as well. It should be actually getting to me any day now.
Yeah. Scott Pilgrim is one where I bought that on PS3 back when it first came out and played through it. And now that it's out again, I can't convince myself that I should buy it a second time. Because I still feel spicy that my old version isn't accessible.
Yeah. No, and I got it back on Xbox back in the day.
Yeah.
In case you're curious, actually, just check tracking. This weekend, I'm getting my Astro City Mini. I'm pretty stoked.
Woo! Yeah, they do. Limited Run does. They put out print versions of like all of those Aspire Star Wars remakes, and I look at every single one of them, even though the Aspire Star Wars remakes aren't like the top tier versions of those games that I would want to collect forever. It's very tempting every time. They had a great looking Doom 64 print for Switch that came in like an N64 box.
Yep.
But it's best if I just don't go on that website. So far, I've only ever bought
I might have also gotten the Ninja Gaiden stuff, vinyl.
But I've never bought it. It's been gifts, or I've like got it used or something. I need to stay off that website.
Yeah, I just went to it like a fool.
Yeah, don't do that.
When's that Castlevania thing coming? I think I did. I'm pretty sure I didn't pre-order the Neo Geo thing because I looked at that. It just looked like a really cool bundle. And now they have the Among Us Collector's Edition that just comes with an emergency button. it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, if they're saving people from Nicholas, then I won't give them any crap. Because at least I know when I buy a game from Limited Run that some of my money is probably going to the person that made that game, which makes me feel better about my purchase.
Yeah. 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 Okay. The Neo Geo Pocket Color Selection Volume 1 thing. Pre-orders until May 23rd. So I have another 2 weeks to think about my life.
You don't need a collection. You probably don't need a single Neo Geo Pocket game, let alone a collection of Neo Geo Pocket games.
I mean, I played the golf game. The golf game's a portable golf game from like 1997.
Yeah, but like, just hold it. You have golf on your Switch. And if you wait a little bit longer, you'll have Mario Golf.
I even have another Neo Geo Golf game on my Switch already.
Yeah, that's. Are there any other Neo Geo
Turf
portable
Masters
games?
Is incredible.
That's sure.
It's all a bunch of fighting games.
You don't need a collection of Neo Geo games.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, John. You talked me off my cliff. Anyway,
there's a reason that Nintendo survived.
Probably going to get the Castlevania thing.
Now that I have all this money freed up.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because I used to be a person who's like, I don't know, I think non-Metroidvania Castlevania games are overrated. And then I got the Castlevania collection and then like played through every game and was like, these are incredible.
Oh, Super Castlevania is masterpiece.
My hot take is I think Castlevania 3 isn't that good.
Which one's Castlevania? That one's
the third NES
game. Okay. I haven't played enough of that one to have a firm opinion on it. That's the one that the Netflix show is based on, I believe.
Sort of, yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
I think that the third one is just too much like the first one, and it's not better than it.
It makes sense though it's their Link to the Past.
Yeah,
it's their they made a game and everyone's like, this is great. They made a game that was real different, and everyone went, uh-oh. And so they're like, oh, never mind, and went back.
Yeah, yeah. And
arguably went back too far.
Yeah, because like I was surprised by how much I just enjoyed the first Castlevania, and I skipped Simon's Quest because I'm a normal human. And then I played 3, and was like, I don't know, like, I remember liking this more when I was younger. And then, like, loved Super Castlevania 4. Bloodlines is on that, the Genesis one that I'd never played. That's great. And then I think it's Kid Dracula, and I feel like there's another one that's also there.
Like the weird Japanese-only ones?
Yeah, because I thought there were 8 games, but maybe there's only 7. No, I don't think Dracula X is on it, but the Kid Dracula game is on there, and that's
good. It like Rondo of Blood or something?
Rondo. I think, you know what?
There was a list.
Yeah.
That could be found. Does it have Castlevania 64 and the other Castlevania 64 that I didn't know existed till I was an adult?
I wish those would come out because I don't think they're good, but I would absolutely play them.
Yeah.
I know. I think we have like a review from. Okay. So, oh, the Game Boy ones are on it. That's what those are bad.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you have 3 NES games, a Super Nintendo game, a Genesis game, the Japanese-only Famicom Kid Dracula game, and then 2 Game Boy games. I might have just talked myself out of buying that limited run thing, too.
Just because of the Game Boy games? Like, they were that?
No, it's because I'm realizing it more that, like, I think 4 of these are great.
Yeah. 4 of them are great, and, like, you probably already have them in another capacity.
Yeah. Like, I literally have the anniversary collection on my Switch already.
But yeah.
Physical games, woo!
Yay!
I want Konami to make Castlevania Anniversary Collection Part 2. Symphony of the Night, Rondo of Blood, Dracula X, and then maybe get some of those GBA and DS games.
I was going to say, they could do a collection that's just DS and GBA games. And, of course, the legendary 3DS one that has too many titles for me to remember.
Yeah, Castlevania.
Did you say Castlevania?
Castlevania, Lords of Shadow, Mirror of Fate.
Yeah, which I thought was fine. I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, the next game that those people made on the 3DS was a lot better. Metroid Samus Returns.
Yeah. But
wouldn't it be something if Mercury Steam made another video game with Nintendo? That'd be real fun.
They should. How about they could port their HD remaster of Mirror of Fate to Switch? Nintendo could be like, all right, you've been waiting for it. Mercury Steam is back with a new Metroidvania. Mirror of Fate HD. It's here.
So all right. Let's we had a listener mail that came in.
Oh yeah.
So we should read that.
Do you have it up?
I do have it up.
Okay.
From either Jesus Mata, guys love the show. I remember the olden days of glory when this one ran nonstop. So glad that connectivity is back. I agree. Not the same cast, but happy with what I'm hearing. It's nice to be able to hear what other Nintendo fans are enjoying / playing.
We've always been the cast. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's been 20 episodes at this point, which is way further than I thought we'd get. I remember when Star Fox Zero was announced, was Miyamoto losing his mind? What's going on? I really thought that we would get a sequel, possibly a prequel, playing as Star Fox's dad or something. Instead, we got a remake / remaster. Okay, Nintendo, I see what you're doing. My first impressions were okay. I'll admit that I was kind of interested in Star Fox Guard. I would not know anything else until it released. When I got the game on launch day, I was taken aback. Controlling it seemed so weird. I need to aim on the gamepad. I got over that quickly and played through the story one time. That was it. One time was more than enough. I couldn't stomach another playthrough. It was like when I was playing Star Fox 64 all over again, and I had just played Star Fox 64 in the 3DS, so it was like I was playing another run-through, just with prettier graphics. I've kind of forgotten of what I did with the game. The walker was cool, the aiming sucked, and I completely forgot about it. Kind of want to get back into it, just to see if there's something new now that I'm so far removed. That would be nice. Overall, I felt kind of let down by Nintendo on this one. If they could do this for Star Fox and have such a rehash, why can't they do this for F-Zero or Metroid? A remake / remaster and change a few things would make plenty of people happy. I mean, what else are we going to call the Zelda Skyward Sword game coming out soon? Overall, glad to see you guys having good memories about this game, making me want to jump back in. Keep up the good work on the podcast. Thoroughly enjoying it, and I'm glad when guests are on. The occasional games are also pretty good. Get Zach to do it more often. So, Zach, this is a threat.
Yep.
You got to come back. It's good to hear. We like Zach, too.
So. Yeah. And we're glad you are enjoying the new era.
Yeah. You should try Star Fox Zero again.
There's a question at the end there where he asks, like, if they can do this with Star Fox Zero, then why can't they do this with F-Zero? And I'll point out that you don't seem to have really liked it when they did it with Star Fox Zero.
So it's actually, this has kind of come up because I think we were talking about it. Well, I mean, it was the thesis of your new Pokemon Snap
review. Yeah. Yeah. It's come up a lot with Pokemon Snap.
And that Pokemon Snap just feels like Nintendo did what, like, occasionally you hear a quote that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, new Pokemon Snap is just Pokemon Snap, but they made it in 2021.
Yep.
And I think what I have to say to that is new Pokemon Snap probably outsold the entire F-Zero franchise on its first day.
Certainly outsold Star Fox Zero.
Yeah. And, you know, it might have taken until a day and a half, but new Pokemon Snap probably outsold the entire Star Fox franchise in a day and a half.
Though I will say at this point, if you're considering buying Pokemon Snap, used copies are getting very common.
Yeah.
That game is not very long.
Nope.
And I think it'll be a very easy game to find from here on out.
And I would say, like, as far as, you know, also with Metroid, I think they did kind of do it with Metroid. They just don't do it that often. Like Metroid Samus Returns, even Zero Mission, granted we're getting back to 17 years ago when Zero Mission came out.
Mm-hmm.
I think, that's going to make me sleep well tonight. The distance between Zero Mission and today is roughly equivalent to the distance between Zero Mission and the original Metroid.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah. I think it's time for
Zero Mission Zero.
I think we're a year away from it being perfectly equal, because I think it's what, 16? Or no, 18 years.
Don't make me do math.
We're 17 years. Yeah. Anyway, it's been a long time. So Nintendo doesn't do it that often with Metroid, but the reason why they do it with, like, a Pokemon game, or you could argue to an extent they do it with Mario games a lot. You know, there were Mario Party games that were, you know, a copy of a copy of a copy. The new mm-hmm. Super Mario Brothers games didn't, you know, I mean,
but then so is Star Fox Zero. Like, and so is Pokemon Snap. It's not that it's a remake. It is new levels, but there's no real innovation going on.
I was thinking about this recently in terms of new Pokemon Snap, because it's something that's come up, especially with the F-Zero comments from oh my god, I'm blanking on his name. We did a whole episode, Imamura. the comments from Imamura. with that all coming up, it's been on my mind more, and kind of thinking about it, it's just like they're doing what they know will sell,
right?
And when it is something like a Star Fox Zero shows up or a Pikmin, it's because Miyamoto wants to do it.
Like, yeah.
So you need to have, I mean, it's common. This is something across every video game company and really every like media. You know, if you think about it, like you'll probably see some characters in Star Wars, like is the Bad Batch previewing, next episode where we talk a lot more about Star Wars. Like the Bad Batch probably happened because Dave Filoni really wanted to do it. If mm-hmm. Dave Filoni wasn't there, that show probably doesn't happen. But then you're going to have the stuff that definitely sells. Like, you know, yeah, they're going to make a Mando season 3 because guess what? That stuff's selling.
Mm-hmm.
But with Nintendo, I think it also comes down to, and this is really what screwed over Metroid when they restructured the development teams. Because, you know, before it was something that Iwata did, and I don't think I want to blame Iwata because I think his decision was right in the long run.
That's a different book.
Yeah. But that you had all the development teams set up as like R&D 1, R&D 2, and like, you know, R&D 1 was the developer, like the development team at Nintendo that was doing things like Metroid. I think it was around 2004, 2005 is when the teams kind of switched around. And that's when you had the EAD groups and you had SPD and stuff like that. And what was R&D 1 kind of got split up into groups that were working with second and third parties as opposed to making games themselves. Mm-hmm. So the team that made Metroid Zero Vision kind of just didn't exist after Metroid Zero Mission was made. Yeah. So there was no one to make a 2D Metroid game. And there's quotes from Sakamoto at the time that he was seeking out, you know, like, even during the Nintendo 64 era, I think they were looking for partners to make a Metroid game on Nintendo 64 because I think R&D 1 didn't have the capacity for it. But I mean, that's what happened after Zero Mission is that, you know, Sakamoto was looking for a development partner to make a Metroid game because the team that made Zero Mission just didn't exist in the same way because their role changed.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with Metroid. And then you kind of lose that voice fighting to make those games. Sakamoto's there still kind of fighting to make Metroid, but he doesn't have the same like control over development teams that, you know, a Miyamoto wanting to make Pikmin 3 happen or make Star Fox Zero happen, where he has a lot more say in the company.
Yeah, well, and the last two times that he has managed to get a Metroid thing to happen, it didn't. Yeah, Samus Returns sold okay.
Samus Returns just came out too late.
That's, for a late 3DS game, it sold fine. Federation Force didn't exactly.
Well, Federation Force was not Sakamoto. That's Tanabe.
No, that's the other guy. That's 3D. Yeah, yeah, thank you. Yeah. No, yeah. I forget that there's like two branches.
Kensuke Tanabe and Yoshio Sakamoto. Sakamoto is the guy who's been there since the original. Tanabe's Prime.
Yes. Yeah.
But even still, I mean, that's what like the Metroid series has never been a big seller.
Yeah. And that's F-Zero is even more in that state.
Yeah. And F-Zero is another one. If you notice when that stopped happening, it was around this development restructure. Although even F-Zero, before the development restructure, was being handled by outside parties. I think Intelligent Systems just did a bunch of early Game Boy Advance games because I think they just knew the hardware really well. I think that's who did Maximum Velocity. And then Amusement Vision at Sega, famously Negoshi, who's making the Yakuza games, he did F-Zero GX. And then I forget what the last couple Game Boy Advance games, I forget who made them, but like that was the waning days of that previous era. And I think, you know, Imamura is one of those people who I think, I forget exactly what team he was a part of before the transition, but he was in a role where he was working with companies like Vite and Q Games, as opposed to being able to make his own games.
Yeah. So if the voices that are going to fight for those aren't in a position to fight for them, then, if they're not going to sell well, even if they do.
Yeah, or even if they fight for them, if they don't have a team to make it.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think your point about Miyamoto having the power to do that and most people not. And even with Miyamoto having the power to do that, like,
Star Fox Zero didn't really work out.
Right. So it's not like just Miyamoto doing something will sell something.
It's like, and I was talking to someone about Monolith Soft, for example, as a company who it seems like they have a lot of leeway to do whatever they want. And I think it probably has something to do with the fact that, like, they have a studio that just helps out with, like, Animal Crossing and Zelda games. And they hit deadlines, so they have the freedom to make whatever weird Xenoblade thing they want to do.
And their weird Xenoblade things sell very... I mean, even their Wii U Xenoblade game, for a Wii U game, like, Xenoblade X,
I think it did fine.
Great numbers on Wii U for a Wii U game.
Yeah.
And every version of... Until they got to Definitive Edition is the first version of Xenoblade that you can find on a shelf a month after it came out. Like, they have made games that have done very well. So they can and do
Xenoblade 2.
Want.
Xenoblade 2 did very well. We always have to mention it.
Tournacell is so sold out that it's now worth like $100.
Yeah, I regret not buying Tournacell separately, so that way I can play a version of that game that I might not hate.
I'll mail it to you. We'll just have a go back and forth of mailing each other.
At some point, I need to just sit down and play Torna. Like, maybe my hope is that Monolith, like, announces their next Xenoblade game at E3, and then I can just, like, be like, now I'm motivated to play Torna.
We could start some sort of connectivity game club if you want for accountability, maybe. And I'll make you play through Torna, and you can pick.
I mean, but if it happens like with Joel playing Star Fox Zero, then I don't know.
Yeah, Joel, if you're listening, dunking on
Xander for being young.
Still waiting for you to finish that game. Just a reminder, it is 45 minutes long. It's not a hard game.
Did you hear this listener mail? He played through it once and was like, pit.
Yeah, that's... Oh, I will say, because I meant to mention this when we were talking about Star Fox Zero 2 episodes ago, but... My modern thought on people commenting on how, like, it just feels like I'm playing Star Fox 64 again. That's fair in that, like, the plot is the same. But as far as, like, the levels and stuff go, I think that calling Star Fox Zero the same as Star Fox 64 is akin to calling every 3D Zelda game the same as Ocarina of Time. Like, that's just the formula, and that's what you wanted. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's, if you don't want Star Fox Adventures, then Star Fox 64 Star Fox is what you wanted, and they're all ideally going to feel like that. And if you don't like that, that's fine, and I kind of agree with you and want them to do something different, but then stop asking for Star Fox 64 if you don't want Star Fox 64. That's my hot, spicy take.
That sounds like a good take to go out on.
Yeah, we'll just end the episode just hard cuts right there. No outro. But yeah, that's going to do it for us this week. If you would like to send in some listener mail, please do. It gives us things to talk about that we might not think to talk about. It doesn't have to be about F-Zero or Star Fox, though we can pretty much talk about F-Zero and Star Fox forever. I feel like half of our listener mail has been like, what's your opinion on this element of F-Zero?
Yeah. Like, I don't mind. Like, I'll
talk about it. I feel like if you guys would like us to talk about anything else, like, feel free. You don't need to feel like you have to bring up Star Fox and F-Zero. We do have opinions on other things, and we'd be happy to share them. You can send those emails to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can also tweet at us by tweeting connectivity or @connectivitynwr on Twitter.
I'll say this and make sure to shame Zach to make sure it comes back. We'll do a game show thing soon.
Yes. So, fun fact before we go, we had planned to have guests on this week, last week, and the week before that.
Although, no, Zach was on the week before that. It's just that we talked about the indie world.
I thought we'd miss, because we were going to have someone on this week, which got moved to next week.
Yeah,
We were going to have Xander on last week. And when were we going to have Joel on?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
I think we're on 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks of we attempted to have guests and people backed out. Not necessarily last minute.
Yeah, so we are going to have guests back on. We want to have guests back on.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely have Zach back on. But
we were going to do a game show with him, and then the indie world happened. And we were like, well, we'll save it for another time.
But yes, if you have any specific staff members, or just, you know, anyone in the world, celebrities, Freddie Prinze Jr., just whoever, that you'd like us to have on, just
would
let us know.
Love to talk to FPJ. We could talk about Sea of Thieves.
We'll campaign.
I think I saw on Twitter that he played through Children of Morta.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, FPJ seems like a real-ass video game playing dude.
I mean, what if we just every week, like on Wednesday afternoon, we just sent him a tweet and we're like, hey, we're recording tonight. Do you want to come on? And we just sent him the Zencaster link.
Yeah.
Just to be like, here's when we just record.
Maybe his DMs are open.
Yeah. Great.
I promise I won't be like, am I a bet? Am I a fucking bet?
I'm just going to talk about the Wing Commander movie. So your least proud moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just be making a lot of she's all that references, being very topical.
We're very up on your current work, yes, as you can tell. But yeah,
I mean, we are, because
we absolutely
like him on Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah.
My wife may or may not have bought his cookbook for me for Father's Day last year.
He has a cookbook?
He does have a cookbook. It's a pretty good cookbook, too.
Ooh, I might need that. All right, well, thank you for listening to the Freddie Prinze Jr. show.
Yeah, we're all about that FPJ.
Tune in next week for legitimately, probably actually, some more Freddie Prinze Jr. talk. All right. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.